This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. LSU Manship School Professor Bob Mann and Advocate editorial writer Lanny Keller will exchange rankings of the 10 Louisiana governors in their lifetime, from Earl Long to John Bel Edwards. Mann worked for Governor Blanco, and Keller was on the Governor Dave Treen team. Keller and Mann will also talk about the testimony of Special Counsel Bob Mueller before two U.S. House committees yesterday, and the discussion about LSU's new multi-million dollar football operations building. Mark Ballard, the Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate, will comment on controversy at LSU's lab school. And cybersecurity expert Gary Malevsky examines the growing cryptocurrency market, the innovative technology that powers it, and learning how to avoid scammers and cyber criminals. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. And we have two distinguished observers of Louisiana politics through their lives. And Lanny Keller's life started in 1956, and Bob Mann's in the year I was born, 1958. Bob is now a distinguished professor at Louisiana State University at the Manship School, and Lanny is an editorial writer for The Advocate. Many of the newspaper editorials are written by him, but it does not say Lanny Keller, and he also writes a column that does have his name. And over the weekend, I was in my old homestead of Little Rock, and I read a column by John Brummett, who's been around in that state about the same amount of time as Lanny and Bob have in this state. And he ranked the 10 governors in his lifetime in the great state of Arkansas. And number one, surprisingly for Brummett, who is a liberal Democrat, he ranked Winthrop Rockefeller number one, a liberal Republican. Believe it or not, in 1967, there were liberal Republicans in the South, and Winthrop Rockefeller is ranked number one by John Brummett. And number 10 is Orville Faubus, the arch segregationist, who was a disaster as far as the state's reputation and won six terms. Arkansas for many years had two-term governors, and Faubus won six times and left in 1967. Arkansas has had some very good governors. One became president, Bill Clinton. Two became U.S. senators, long-standing U.S. senators, Dale Bumpers and David Pryor, and another became a major player on the national scene, finishing second to Mitt Romney in the 2008 race for the Republican nomination for president, Mike Huckabee. Louisiana, over the last half century and more, has had governors mostly regarded as failed governors. And that's what we have with Lanny Keller and Bob Mann to assess, from Earl Long to John Bel Edwards. Who was best? Who was worst? And you can rank them any way you want to. Brummett, in his rankings, says the 10 governors are ranked in terms of accomplishment, competence, efficiency, and legacy without regard to whether I agree ideologically. So we'd like to hear from you as well. Again, the number is 877-217-5757. We will cover some other topics, but let's start with this one. And Bob Mann, you worked for Governor Kathleen Blanco and three U.S. senators from Louisiana. Who's number one on your list?
Well, Jim, it's a tough way to – it's a tough job to try to rank all those governors. I eventually decided that I would rank them by just the impact they had on Louisiana for good or ill, sort of taking the approach that Time Magazine does every year in its Person of the Year, not the best person of the year or the worst person of the year, but the person who had the most impact on the country or the world. And so this is my quick ranking, and we can talk about it. I also have some sub-rankings on different issues, policy areas that we can discuss later. But based on who had the most impact on Louisiana government, who transformed Louisiana or Louisiana government the most over his or her time in office, I ranked them in this order. Number one, Edwin Edwards. Number two, John McKithen. Number three, Earl Long. Number four, Bobby Jindal. John Bel Edwards, Mike Foster, Kathleen Blanco, Dave Treen, Buddy Romer, and Jimmy Davis, in that order.
All right. And Lanny Keller, distinguished writer for The Advocate and former member of the Treen team, he, in a conversation we just had, ranks the governors primarily on their Well, it goes beyond effectiveness.
Well, you know, it's my job to ignore what editors tell me. So I took this assignment and I said, this assignment doesn't make any sense unless you set up a criterion. And not being a professor, I just did it the old-fashioned way. I said, this is who was the most effective in the sense of, not just in the sense of accomplishments that we can point to, but just in the fact of when they pick up the phone and say something, by God, somebody will do it. And that, of course, makes it a more personal list because I didn't know Earl Long. I didn't know John McKithen as governor, although I met him after that, or for that matter, Governor Davis. My list is similar to Bob's, but also I tended to rate, and again, maybe this is a little ideological part of it, I tended to rate down people who, like as in Brummett's piece, people who were kind of the old school. To me, it's more important. You get more points for challenging the system. You get more points for changing something that has been the old traditional Louisiana way of doing business. And so, Bob, hold on to your hat, Bob. But I put Bobby Jindal first, before Edwin Edwards. I put Mike Foster third, John McKithen fourth, the current Governor Edwards after that, Kathleen, the wonderful Kathleen Blanco, whom we all know and love, my own boss, David C. Treen, Romer, Davis, and Long in that order.
Okay, well, at one time, Lanny was a defender of Bobby Jindal, and then you became a critic of him. But you rank him number one, and this is not for what he accomplished, more than what he meant to the state. I'm trying to get one word to describe it. Bob's, I think, is impact. What is your word?
Effectiveness.
Effectiveness.
I call it the E-list. Also, I'd say that Jindal does have some very long standing accomplishments. The current Governor Edwards is going around the state, and the teachers' unions are still kvetching about Act 1 of 2012, which really helped change the education landscape of the state. And that was something that Jindal basically rammed through. He did away with the charity hospitals, basically, and that was something that people said would never be done in Louisiana. I think there's a good argument to be made that he needs to be high up on an E-list.
Okay, well, Bob Mann has been a critic of Edwin Edwards. In fact, he left the Democratic Party when the party endorsed Edwards for Congress in 2014, and I am somewhat surprised that you have him number one, Bob. Why?
Well, I don't think that Lanny and I are too far off. I think almost every one of Lanny's rankings was within one or two of mine, except for maybe Earl Long.
Yeah. Huh? There are a few, but Earl Long's one where you're wide.
Yeah, Earl was the one I think that was furthest away from any of mine.
Bob is a real historian, and I am not.
But anyway, you have Edwin Edwards number one.
Yeah, I had Edwin Edwards number one, and I think that is just by virtue of his the long shadow that he continues to cast over Louisiana politics, four terms. Mm-hmm. And even when he was, as Lanny can tell you, even when he was not in office, he still dominated Louisiana politics.
Absolutely.
And our rankings are different, maybe somewhat the same, different criteria for sure, but we generally come to somewhat similar conclusions because I put Jindal up pretty high on my list because of the lasting impact that he had on Louisiana politics, as Lanny points out. John Bel Edwards is running for re-election to undo a lot of what Bobby Jindal did, and which endures. And so, from that standpoint, I think Jindal did have great impact. Not as much as Edwards, but great impact.
877-217-5757 for Bob Mann and Lanny Keller on Talk Louisiana, and we go to David in Atlanta. Hello, David. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, I would give Bobby Jindal an absolute dead last, but I'd like to give Uncle Earl Long an honorable mention. He established UNO in New Orleans, and it was open to people of all races and skin colors, which was somewhat, to say the least, controversial at the time. And I'll tell you, any governor who would like strippers as much as I do, I think that was one of his only scandals was he was having an affair with Blaze Starr. And I'll tell you something else. I remember when Uncle Earl took a whiz in Jackson Square when he was honoring the president of France, General Charles de Gaulle.
All right. Well, he was a character, and he also was institutionalized. We have one governor who went to prison after he was governor, Edwin Edwards, and another one who went to a hospital in Lanny Keller. That's the stuff of legend for those.
Oh, absolutely. And it was quite a dramatic story too. The story goes that the editor of our newspaper, Maggie Dixon, was on the floor of the Senate, I believe, and when Earl did his famous meltdown, and she was one of the few people who was both a friend of both Earl and Blanche, which took some doing, and also one of the few people who could calm him down and kind of walk him off the floor so he could compose himself to the extent he ever did. Those were remarkable episodes.
And Bob, you are a historian. Earl Long was last governor in 1960, the year he won a congressional race, and dropped dead before he ever served in the House. He was a two-term governor of Louisiana, but many years apart, and certainly he is a big part of the state, maybe not as much as his more famous brother, but Earl Long should not be forgotten.
No, and I think that one of the reasons why I ranked Long so high on my list was because we're still talking about him. when you say Uncle Earl in Louisiana, everyone instantly knows who you're talking about.
We've got to roll for just a moment. We'll be back in 90 seconds. We'll hear more pearls of wisdom from Bob Mann and Lanny Keller on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. We're talking with Bob Mann and Lanny Keller about a few different things, but we start with the 10 governors in their lifetime, also my lifetime, 1 to 10, from Earl Long to John Bel Edwards. There was Earl Long, then Jimmy Davis, then John McKithen, then Edwin Edwards the first time, David Treen, Buddy Romer, Kathleen Blanco, Mike Foster before Blanco, Bobby Jindal, and now John Bel Edwards. Those are the 10. And both of these gentlemen have strived to be fair. Lanny Keller, who ran a campaign against Edwin Edwards, ranks him number 2 and became a critic of Bobby Jindal. He ranks him number 1, but he is basing this on, quote, their effectiveness in getting done what they wish to do. Now, Bob Mann is a broader brush here. He ranks them on impact, and he has Edwards 1, and Bobby Jindal is number 4. John McKithen is number 2 on Bob Mann's list. He was number 1 on mine. 877-217-5757. Let's go to Ellen in Sherwood. Ellen, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I would say Bobby Jindal had an extremely negative impact, and there is a reason why Louisiana ranks last or next to last in most categories, including education. And he worked actively to help destroy public education, and he was the one who advocated for charters, even ones that weren't accredited and have failed. So that has taken so many funds and from higher education. So he's had an extremely negative impact, I would say.
Lanny?
Ellen makes a great point. And at the same time, I would argue that every one of these people, just because, again, Bob and I have had the privilege of knowing a lot of them personally, they're extraordinary individuals. And everybody has some accomplishments, some of which didn't pan out until later in life. But I would note that it was Kathleen Blanco who actually made the great breakthrough for charters in the sense that she created the Recovery School District. And then post-Katrina, Jindal continued that and created the innovative school system that we have in New Orleans now.
Bob Mann, was Jindal a good governor?
You asking me?
Yes. they're speechless.
I think you know my answer, but no, I don't think Jindal. I think Jindal was a terrible governor, a disastrous governor, and I think his awfulness was so epic that that he deserves to be pretty high on my list, because I think that he did mm-hmm. damage that's lasting and that will be remembered for generations. And so I think if you were asking me to rate governors on their quality versus impact, I would rate Jindal near the last, if not the bottom.
Glenn on Burbank. Glenn, you're on Talk Louisiana with Lanny Keller and Bob Mann. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, thanks. Saying greatest is clearly subjective, so thank you guys both for sort of defining how you choose your governors. I want to say two things. One, my greatest disappointment, and I've been on the planet about as long as both Professor Mann and your other guests. Two greatest disappointments. Edwin Edwards, because I really believe he could have been the greatest governor in the nation had he focused all of his efforts on making Louisiana a great state, because he clearly had the mind to do that. And he just, I think, had too many distractions and too many other things. The other disappointment was Jindal. I think he had all the elements to make a great governor. Just didn't. But I really would like to inject in the conversation Governor Foster for impact, and for this reason. And just disclaimer, I did work in the community college system for a few years at the system level and in some of the colleges. He created the community college system in Louisiana, which is now the largest system, having the greatest impact on those who up to that point probably did not have access to higher education. And the lives I've seen change in the community college systems are tremendous.
All right. Well, Mike Foster was number two on my list, and on Lanny's list, number three, and on Bob's, number six. He was governor during times when he didn't have to deal with budget problems. It was during the Clinton years, and the state was doing well, as was the nation, but he did a lot of things, and he also went to law school. Mm-hmm. Not many governors are able to do that, but Lanny, you were nodding as Glenn Duncan was talking.
And I think the community college system is a great legacy, but he made many other changes, too, changes that were more controversial, tort law, which trial lawyers strongly opposed. But he was kind of like the Dwight Eisenhower of the governor's mansion drive.
There because, you go. I like that comparison.
Because, you know, he wasn't as eloquent a speaker as some of these other folks, but he hired talented people. If you rated the governors on the basis of the people that they hired who stayed in the state, that kind of excludes Jindal in somewhat many ways, who stayed in the state and had an enduring impact after that, I think Mike Foster's aides are the star of that class.
And like as John McKithen changed the landscape of New Orleans with the Superdome, Foster certainly, Lanny is nodding, and I think Bob would probably agree, changed the landscape of downtown Baton Rouge along with his commissioner of administration, Mark Drennan. Downtown is now a happening place, and Mike Foster and crew deserve much credit for that, among other things. Bob, your review of the Foster years.
Yeah, I would agree. I agree with Lanny. I agree with everything Lanny said. I think that Foster, there were these 12 years in a row in Louisiana when we had two governors who supported higher education in a big way, and Foster began that with the people around him supporting him and a legislature that went along with him. Did a lot for higher education. There were some great years that some great mm-hmm. momentum that higher education had that got the brakes put on by Bobby Jindal.
Well,
but I think his support of higher education is a great legacy for Foster.
A listener in Alexandria, Christine, notes that Foster also gave us Bobby Jindal.
Indeed he did.
Yes, he did.
I once had a congressman with conversation with Congressman Jindal over coffee, in which I suggested that had Katrina not come along, Kathleen Blanco, because incumbent governors typically are reelected, would have had eight years of her term plus the 8 years of Foster, because they were very similar in many ways and many policy measures. That would have kind of institutionalized the Foster reforms in a profound way. Jindal didn't like that because he obviously expected to run against Governor Blanco and win. As it turned out, he had a freer shot at it in 07.
877-217-5757 is your number. Both of these gentlemen rank the current governor, John Bel Edwards, number five, and that's probably a safe ranking. I had him number four And if he does well in his second term, he might move up. But most governors, as we know, have better first terms than second.
I think this, the historian Brookhiser said that there have been no successful second terms since James Monroe's. I'm not sure if that is Governor Edwards, the second Governor Edwards, is in a pretty good shape for reelection, I think, politically. But at the same time, he's still to be tested in that. On my list, and I made a point of saying, getting reelected is a real political measure of effectiveness.
Well, and we're going to find out. And we're 2.5 months away. And Governor John Bel Edwards has had some events that he has handled well. And Kathleen Blanco, Bob, you were there. She was blamed. Unfairly, but blame for Katrina, and it's hard to get that whammy off her back.
Yeah, it is. I think the history of Katrina is being rewritten, and it's being reassessed as we speak. And I think within a few more years that it will be completely rewritten in ways that reflect on her and her leadership much better than the initial history did.
877-217-5757 is your number, and we're going to talk with Bob Mann and Lanny Keller about a few different items, but a listener asked why both of them rank Buddy Romer so low, because Buddy Romer did have big ideas, but we'll get Lanny and Bob's take on whether those ideas went anywhere. Lanny has Romer 8th, and Bob has him number 9 on the list of the top 10 governors, 1 to 10. There have only been 10. Buddy Romer, who listens to this show, is probably not a happy camper right now, but we'll talk with them about the Romer legacy. I had him higher than that. In fact, I think I had Romer number 5. We'll talk more with Lanny and Bob after this brief timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757. A bit more time with Bob Mann and Lanny Keller, and soon we'll be joined by Lanny's colleague at The Advocate, Mark Ballard, for our weekly visit, but they ranked, Keller and Mann did, the 10 governors in their lifetime, and surprisingly, they both kind of surprised me with their number one choices, and we're talking about impact with Bob, effectiveness for Lanny. Edwin Edwards, number one on Mann's list, and number one on Lanny's list, Bobby Jindal. 877-217-5757. As mentioned, a listener at Tracy at the Capitol notes that Buddy Romer was low on both lists, 8th for Keller, 9th for Mann, and Buddy Romer came along after Edwin Edwards has served 3 terms in office and inherited a huge deficit and was going to scrub the budget, bring Louisiana into a new day. How successful was he, Lanny Keller?
Well, his successes, well, and again, I rated on effectiveness, and getting reelected is a really important barometer of that, right? However, many of his successes were things like riding the ship, as you say, after the oil price collapse and Edwards' terrible third term, but also his long-term impact was far greater than 7th or 8th on any list, because many of the ideas that he championed, even when he got shot down in some of the turmoil in the legislature or the referenda, eventually they were adopted. So that was a guy who had a tremendous impact over a longer period of time. My own boss, Dave Treen, you know, had the World's Fair in his term and redeveloped the warehouse district in New Orleans. Well, that didn't pay dividends until long after he had left office, but it's still paying dividends for the people of New Orleans today. So there are long-term impacts that are not reflected in my list, and that pushes good people down the list.
Well, Bob, Buddy Romer ran one of the best campaigns for governor ever in 1987 and one of the worst ever in 1995, and you were on his trail in 95, and I remember you were putting out the Buddy System was a newsletter that Bob was putting out, and it wasn't very flattering, but the governor, Buddy Romer, he had some strengths, but nonetheless, he was thwarted by a Democratic legislature, and he ultimately became a Republican. Why was he not as successful as he hoped to be?
Well, I mean, you know, the problem was, and I agree with what Lanny said, Romer had great ideas. I think that history has been much kinder to what he wanted to do
than the legislature and the public was at the time. And much of what Romer had in mind has been was adopted by later governors and legislatures. And so maybe Romer deserves to be a little bit higher on my list because of that. And that's one reason why maybe eventually John Bel Edwards will move up. It's too early to tell what long-term impact he will have. If you'd asked me 10 years ago to rate Romer as a governor, I would have put him even lower. My view of him has...
Lower than ninth?
I might have put him at 10. I might have...
Or 11.
On effectiveness. On
or
effectiveness.
35, yeah.
Because he, you know, but I think that there's an argument to be made that if you count effectiveness as the eventual enactment of his ideas, and that Romer maybe deserves to be higher. I think he aspired to be a better governor than he was able to be, and I think he deserves more credit for that.
All right, quickly, a few other topics, and of course, in the days to come, we'll be talking more. But the Mueller testimony, Bob. Both sides are claiming victory. I think it's apparent that Bob Mueller doesn't have very good television skills, but was his message enough for Democrats to continue this theme that Donald Trump is a corrupt president?
Well, to continue the theme, yes, to actually persuade enough House members and most importantly, Nancy Pelosi to agree to launch impeachment proceedings, I don't know, and I kind of doubt it.
Lanny?
I cannot argue with that. One of our conservative columnists said, I never thought I'd be writing that Nancy Pelosi is the voice of moderation, but in fact she is, and she represents a shrewdness about politics that is frankly absent from some of the pitchfork brigade on the left in the Democratic Party.
And Bob, you have drawn some attention this week for taking note that the $28 million Athletic Palace, the football operations center and nutrition center for athletes, is standing tall and proud on campus while the library is drowning. The quarterback at LSU even took aim at Bob Mann, saying you were not, I'm paraphrasing him, Joe Burrow said that you should not disparage the fruits of their labor or something to that effect. Are you taking this personally, Bob?
No. In fact, I'm...
Well, you should. I'm on Joe Burrow's side.
I don't really have a problem with the facility itself. My observation, which I think is akin to observing that the sun is rising in the east in the mornings, is that in Louisiana we're more interested in football than education. And will that ever change? I don't know. But it's not going to change unless we talk about it. And this was an opportunity to talk about it. And I'm glad it sparked a conversation. Whether it will change anything, I don't know.
We agreed editorially. That is part of the Jindal legacy, which he dismantled the traditional financing mechanisms of higher education.
Well, we're going to talk more about this with Mark Ballard in just a moment, the Capital Bureau Chief for the Advocate, but. Last year, I remember Stephanie Regal of the Business Report did a cover story about the rec center at LSU, and that one cost $85 million. That's $85 million. The football operations center was done on the cheap, only $28
million. When I think back of the ratty Power Hall tennis courts that we used to play on, this is there's something wrong not just with LSU but with the system in which these kind of frills are so important to recruiting students as well as athletes.
Well, Bob, it's the old axiom: we need a university our football team can be proud of.
Well, yeah, and when you take a state that is now a university that is now 75% of its budget is tuition and fees, you've got to treat your students like customers, and customers expect thrills like a rec center. That's just the reality of the funding model today.
And that brings us back to our original discussion. Bobby Jindal changed higher education a great deal, and some would say not for the better.
Me too.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Lanny.
And thank you, Jim.
A listener online says we need to bring you back to rate the presidents in your lifetime. That would be Dwight Eisenhower 34 through Donald Trump 45. We got 12. We'll have the dirty dozen when we bring Lanny and Bob back. Thank you, guys. Let's do that, I hope. And see you soon. Take care.
Thanks, Jim.
Bye-bye. And we're joined now by Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate. And Bob, or excuse me, Mark Ballard has been following this controversy, if you will, about the LSU operations building for football. And it's a $28 million palace and one that is made possible not through taxpayer contributions, but through donations. And Lee Michael, who used to work at LSU, a professional fundraiser and today's advocate, has a letter to the editor. He starts as an LSU alumnus and former resident of Baton Rouge. I find it disappointing that the board and the president of my alma mater and the state's governor are not alarmed that its athletic foundation, raises more money than its academic foundation. And Mark Ballard, that's a valid criticism, I think. He says it's the only school in the Southeastern Conference with something going on like this. This is a story that I think has relevance, but most people are going rah-rah for the Tigers and getting ready for the opener against Georgia Southern on August 31st. They take great pride in the athletic program, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
Yeah, it seems it's more of a philosophical debate as to, you know, whether you want to give money to the football program or whether you want to give money to the academics. And I would dare say that a lot of those people that are had paid seat licenses in the various stadiums of sports activities have not given any money to the academic side of it. It is something that the LSU administrators are trying to do because the endowment, the basic money that they have, it's like Harvard has like $30 billion, and a lot of those of the big academic schools have these massive endowments. And ours is not even a million. I think it's it is a million. I'm sorry, but it's very, very small, and we're not even close to a billion as most of the schools have. And that I think is because of a system in which we expected the state to pay for it, and we as citizens are not giving money to LSU or any of the other public universities.
Well, a listener notes that Scott Woodward came to LSU from Texas A&M to be athletic director, and A&M has an endowment of $13 billion. And as you note, Mark, LSU less than $1 billion, lowest in the SEC, by the way, among the 14 schools. Ernie Ballard, the spokesman for LSU, says that 70% of the contributions go to the LSU Foundation and directly to LSU, 28% to athletics and 2% to alumni. That's from the university. And LSU is on a major endeavor to raise more than $1 billion for its campus. And I would imagine it will be successful. But we as a and you and I and Lanny Keller included, we're graduates, and we have a very low rate of graduates contributing back to the university.
It does. Well, let me say I do. I contribute to the academic side as well as to TAF because it is part of my TAF seat license. But that's very few and far in between. And generally, I mean, think about it, is that the TAF license is usually a couple of $100 per seat, and that money goes to the Tiger Athletic Foundation. And people feel like, well, I've already given my, $200, $400 to TAF. I'm not going to give any more.
Right. 877-217-5757. And a few years ago, a Jindal appointee, Stephen Morey, was head of the LSU Foundation. It was a big loss when he left because he was a master at fundraising. And he took note that only 6% of the graduates at that time were giving to the university. That's changed. It's up a bit, but LSU still has a ways to go. More with Mark after this brief timeout on Talk Louisiana. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for the Advocate, is with us, and we go to Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Yeah, Mr. Ballard, can we draw some correlation between red state Louisiana's great support of Trump and the priority of football over academics?
Well, I've noted that all 11 SEC states, all 11 of them voted for Donald John Trump, 11-0, and 150 electoral votes there, too. So you get the 11 SEC states, Mark, and you only need 120 more to be president, and Donald Trump will probably carry every one of them again with the possible exception of Florida. But obviously the South, where football is king, is also Trump territory. Why?
Well, boy, I don't know. I believe that it's conservative outlooks on life in general, and has been for hundreds of years. Basically, a tradition-bound place, and we're not that interested in changing too many things. But that's, you know, that's Mark's view from over a beer. I don't have any statistics or studies that would prove that at all. But there is truth in that the Deep South is votes for Donald Trump and is also very much football oriented.
Now, today's front page story in The Advocate, a fine piece from Charles Lucier, the education reporter, former elementary principal of Lab School, sues LSU. The Lab School is a big part of this community, and some things are going on there that obviously when it makes front page news, it's a big story.
It is, and I just, this has been an entire week of bad news for LSU. With former employees kind of lashing out at the university over various policies that they have. The lawsuit is going to be a pretty major issue in the coming months, I think.
Yeah, it's a story that has legs, as they say, and LSU has some turmoil, and anytime something happens on that campus, even if it's the Lab School, right now, fingers are pointed at President Alexander. He has to be in an uncomfortable seat, certainly a hot seat right now, Mark.
I would think so. Mainly there is a lot of talk about that it's time for him to kind of move on. But he does have the support of the Board of Supervisors, and they're the people who decide whether or not he's going to stay. And basically every meeting that they have is they include, several minutes of a love fest for Dr. Alexander, who we need to point out is that he was shepherding our flagship university during a time that, as you mentioned, and as Lanny and Bob Mann mentioned over and over again, that Bobby Jindal was changing the funding for our higher education. And LSU really kind of got stuck with that, and he's been able to kind of keep it on an even keel and even increase the number of students there.
All right. Holly in the Garden District asks that next time we talk to Mark Ballard, we should get his take on the 10 governors, and your lifetime's about the same as the three people who were discussing it. So next week, if you're game, we'll get your take on this, Mark.
Okay. I'll have to think about it. I would disagree. I agreed with some of what Lanny and Bob said, but would disagree with a lot of what they said as well.
Okay. Well, next week we'll talk with Mark Ballard about his governors, 1 through 10 in his lifetime in Louisiana. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
And we're joined now by a gentleman who's one of the internationally recognized cybersecurity experts, Gary Malevsky. And Gary, tell me if I mispronounced your name. I want to make sure we got it right, but am I right or wrong?
Jim, perfect. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. For once, I'm right. Gary Malevsky, who has written a book called Crypto Economy, Bitcoins, Blockchains, and Bad Guys. And he is here today primarily to talk about cryptocurrency and where we're going with this. And it is certainly a wave of the future and something that probably will grow. How fast will it grow in your estimation, Gary?
Well, Jim, today, if you go to a website called coinmarketcap.com, you won't believe how many cryptocurrencies are listed, 2,380. So Bitcoin was the first, but there's many more. But about 100 of them are the ones that really matter. You've probably heard of Ethereum or Litecoin, and there's some others out there like Ripple. But right now, the market cap for cryptocurrency is $276 billion, with a B, billion dollars, trading in almost $60 billion in daily volume.
Well, how do you safely purchase bitcoins?
There aren't many safe ways to do it. This is the challenge, right? So there's a few companies like Kraken with a K or Coinbase, which is in the U.S. And if you were to go to Coinbase, for example, you could set up an account. It's kind of like PayPal, right? Except that you're saying, here's my money. Give me an account online showing me my Bitcoins or Ethereum or others in my wallet. And you're trading your U.S. dollars for a virtual currency, and they're holding it for you, and you're hoping that it won't disappear, they won't get hacked, other issues might not happen.
And there's much discussion, Gary, about the blockchain technology that powers it. What's all the hype about blockchain?
Well, the hype is what happened was, you know, and blockchain could be used for so many things beyond crypto. It's really about non-reputable transactions. You know, I said I sold my house to you. How do we know? We go look at the records at the registrar, and there it is, and it's signed over, and you've got the title, and there's a registrar. So blockchain is kind of a way of having an independent on-the-internet registrar for any kind of event. Transferring a piece of your crypto, you don't have to send me the whole Bitcoin. You could send me a piece of a Bitcoin. And blockchain can be used for many other things. They've talked about using it for voting, for medical records. Because it deals with security and encryption and the internet, it's kind of a natural evolution for people trading things, if that makes sense.
How do we learn about avoiding scammers and cyber criminals are up to no good?
Well, they are out there. So, you know, keep an eye out on the news and be very cautious. There's a consumer.gov website that helps educate consumers about this. But one of the things that's hot, for example, is the initial coin offering. So, as I said, there were over 2,000 cryptos. You've heard of an IPO, right?
Of course. Yeah.
So, Jim, the new thing is I don't want to go through SEC loops. I just want to start some new cool company. And I'm going to create my own cryptocurrency and sell it to everybody around the globe as fast as I can. So the ICO is a new model, and you don't know if these companies are trustworthy or not, but they may have good advisors, they may have a good board of directors, they may have a good management team, and you're trading your dollars for their currency that might be worth something. Now, one of the ICOs, called Ripple, is worth billions because they're helping fix the way banks communicate for the SWIFT payment gateway that's vulnerable. But it's really hard to tell who can I trust and who can't I trust, so you really have to do a little digging before you jump into cryptocurrency.
Well, how do we report earnings or losses to the IRS the same way we do other stock transactions? Is it another layer of activity that requires some intricate knowledge?
Actually, the IRS originally looked at cryptocurrency as kind of like real estate. It's property. It's something you own. It's like a book that you bought. But now they've thought about it because it's being used as an alternative form of cash. They're actually looking at crypto as an investment that you can have a short-term capital gain or a long-term capital gain. And as you would report a stock that you sold and made a lot of money on, if in less than 12 months you went through the same situation, you bought Bitcoin on the low, you sold it on the high, you now have to report that on one of the IRS forms the same way you would report short-term capital gain on stocks.
Well, the IRS, the SEC, other government agencies, are they looking at this closely, or is this something that's still out there and in flux as far as how to deal with it?
Yeah, they're trying to figure it out, and the SEC has done some rulings on some of these ICO companies where they've said, look, don't try to sell your fake stock known as a token to U.S. citizens without explaining it better and registering with us and telling us more. So I think you'll see more and more of the U.S. government getting involved as the value of crypto goes up. Right, so now we're at a quarter of a trillion in trades. What if it gets to, you know, 5 trillion or 10 trillion? Now it's as big as the whole Forex, the whole foreign money exchange, and it's bigger than the stock market. So that's where you'll see more and more government involvement.
We have about 30 seconds, Gary, but a listener asked about Facebook launching something called Libra, which is cryptocurrency. What do you know about this?
I don't think President Trump is going to let them pull it off, to be honest with you. He's already tried to kibosh it and has said that they're not a bank and they're going to have to get regulated like a bank if they want to do it. And he's got the federal agencies, they're looking into this, and I think they're going to push back hard on Facebook.
Well, this is a story that will continue, and I suspect the cryptocurrency will grow, and we'll be talking more with Gary Malevsky. We hope so. His book is Cryptoeconomy, Bitcoins, Blockchains, and Bad Guys. Thank you so much for joining us today, Gary. It's been a pleasure.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
See you soon. And tomorrow we'll be back, same time, same place, and we'll be talking about the governor's race and the Mueller testimony before Congress. Among our guests, Mary Patricia Ray, who was on the front lines, and Governor John Bel Edwards' successful quest to win the governorship in 2015. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. For J.C. Kane, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.